Here is the second to last the last paragraph in the second section on the first page.
What are we talking about?
Last paragraph.
Second,
first page. You see that? Lufichach?
Amarum, Vadan.
Yes.
Can we get that?
What?
Updated. Sorry. Where?
First page.
Oh.
Lufichach. Lufichach. The second. Last paragraph in the second section on the page.
Lufichach Amarum?
Right. Okay? You all got it now? Lufichach Amarum. Man Malachi Asher Yisra Bonim. It says that who are the Malachim? Who are considered to be the angels, the rabbis.
You're an angel?
If I admitted it, it wouldn't be true. Rambam Sham, like the Rambam writes there, when he speaks about the Truma and Maaser, the Taisa which are given to Shevet Levi. So he says, Lo Shevet Levi, not just the tribe of Levi Bilvat, anybody wants to be like Shevet Levi can be like Shevet Levi. And the Rav Sadek said in the previous paragraph, which we saw last week, that Shevet Levi is called Malachim. Why they call Malachim? Because a Malach means an agent, a messenger, somebody who has a specific mission to fulfill on the part of the entity which sent him. And the Kohanim are the agents of Hashem, the messengers of Hashem, in order to teach us Torah. Kohanim and Levim in general. Not just Kohanim, but Levim in general. So anybody who wants to become like a Levi can come like a Levi, meaning he can sit and study and become a great scholar, and then he can, of course, himself teach, and then he himself becomes like a Malach as well. He then also becomes the messenger, the agent of Hashem. So far, so good? Now, he says, it doesn't mean that he's holy like an angel. Is that clear? It means you just have this angelic quality of teaching. If I do, it's wonderful if he's also angelic in his character, but that doesn't always happen. So he says, "V'kol Hashem," and it says in the Gemara in the Dorim, "Amai kakori lemakori luhu malachi asharis." Why are the human sages called the angels who serve Hashem? The mitzainu k'malachi asharis. They are unique. Mitzuyan means literally something which is designated. Mavir Mitzuyan means excellent, something which excels, but it means something which stands out. So just like Malachim, if you saw an angel, it would happen to stand out in the crowd. So too, you see a Talmud Chacham, he's supposed to stand out. He is unique. He's special. And that he's going to explain. V'kmosha Isa, like it says, v'vrochas, in Masechta Brachos Chesem Aleph, she'orim mitzionim ba'alocha. There's a concept of the gates which are marked, which are outstanding in halacha, meaning places where people learn halacha. Chayin Talmid Chacham, so too is a Talmid Chacham, a scholar, kol drachav, all of his pathways, binyonav, and his manners, mitzionim, are outstanding, umusumanim, and are indicated, literally they have a simon, they have some sort of sign that they are unique, api halacha. To the point that everything is done meticulously according to halacha. Meaning if everything is done meticulously according to halacha, that makes this person different, special. Adki, to the point that we say, gam aleyu lo yibol. It says, interesting, Gemara Masechta Sukkah, it says that, concerning this pasuk, I forget what this pasuk is, I think it's in Tehillim, it says that his leaf will not wilt. And the Gemara says that it means that even the mundane discussions of the Talmud Chacham of its age, Tzricha Talmud, must be learned. Because even things that the Talmud Chacham says as part and parcel of his daily mundane existence have a unique aspect and because they come from the Talmud Chacham. So therefore, they are infused or imbued with the Torah which he studies when he's studying it.
So we're supposed to Taish pass me the remote control? If the Talmud Chacham says, pass me that watermelon, we're supposed to like...
Well,
like,
what does he mean? It's not necessarily you've asked the question. If he makes a comment which indicates some more portentous thing than just pass me the chips, right? It's not not when he asks you to do something for him. And that's what he says, Shaloyas, why the Shaloyas the Shumaseh, Kosh, we won't do any deed whatsoever, Minyone Olamaseh, from matters of this world, and he won't even blink his eyes. Wow. In law pi haTorah, if not, if that is according to Torah, for Rosh and Hashem is brought in the will of God. V'achal on haTorah hazot, and it only to this goal, your kuno will be directed, kol zikei, all of the rays, of machshavto, of his thoughts, diburo, his speech, umasot, and his deeds. Nu, if a person is like that, he names them mamish dugmas malachi hashol, it's kamor. He's literally a parallel like the angels, as we mentioned. Vayin sham barosh varan, and look there in the Rosh and the Ran, in the Dorim, in their commentaries, mashapirshu, which they, what they explained, shebechol devareyem devarai. In everything they said, you will find what I said. So the first interpretation, mitzionim means they're unique, they stand out in everything they do is according to halacha, and therefore everything they do is on a different astral plane than other people. That's one interpretation. The Rashi's on. Rashi says a different interpretation. Rashi, Piresh, explains, Shatufin betzitzis. The sages wear tzitzis just like the malachim wear tzitzis. Which is very strange, right? Malachim don't have to wear tzitzis, right? But that's what it says. So he brings that in the brackets. Do you have brackets there? Should have backwards.
Do you have brackets?
Yeah, I get that. Okay. Well, why is it, because I had to copy this from one program to another program in order to print it. And we have to, some things get messed up when you do that. Well, why is it, because the mitzaytay. Maybe he had in his Gisa, in the Gemara, in his version of maybe didn't say the mitzayne with a nun, which means they're outstanding, but the mitzaytay with the tzadi, which is they have tzitzit. Right? So therefore, perhaps that's what he had in the mark. But in any event.
Rashi's
Gerson? No, Rashi is speculating. Perhaps he had it. Rashi does not have a Gerson. Rashi is speculating. V'nir shis gavin zal gemara de Shabbos. It seems that he had in mind the gemara and Shabbos. Chavon beis, or whatever, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Loi. It says Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Loi. I think it's Rabbi Shmuel. Sho'ahoy amisatek b'stinim hamtziyotim. Erev Shabbos. Just before Shabbos began, he would wrap himself in a linen garment, which had tzitzis on it, obviously a four-corner garment, and he would sit waiting for Shabbos. The doimel amalach Hashem tzokos, and he looked like an angel of God. So it says Rashi, oh, what do we see from here? We see that wearing tzitzis makes the person angelic. V'shuv ra'isi came, and it says in Tzadik, I then saw Rashi, says, he says, the Kiddushin, and the Sechta Kiddushin, Amati She'isa Shom, and that which it says there, one person asked the other, Hareini Tamid HaChomim Shebabavel, show me the scholars in Babel. Amalei, and the other person said, Domi El Malachi HaShavit, they look like angels. And there, Piresh, there he explains, Sheheim Levushim Levonim, that they're wearing white clothing, Batufim, and wrapped in that clothing, Kamalachi Hashavis, like angels. And what's the source to say that angels are white, are wrapped in white clothing? Because there's a pasuk in Navi, I think it's in Hosea, which says that one of the later ones, Chagas Chara Malachi. So it says that Ish Levush Habadi. No, Daniel, that's where it is. In Daniel, it says that the malach was the person wearing the linen clothes. Daniel had a vision, which he saw an angel, and the angel was wearing linen clothing, fine white linen clothing. And the Rashi there says explicitly that so too we find in the second parak of Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda, it's not Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi, etc., that they're just like the angels wear nice clothing, so too they wear, the Talmid HaChomer wear nice clothing as well. Can we finish the page? Okay. V'nira shalom alafari shom miti kaloshon. It seems that he inferred this from the phrasing of the language as shebevavel. Whoever Talmid HaChomer have unique quality and dress differently in Bavel, the lowest Shem Eretz Yisrael, not in the land of Israel. Well, P. Akmar is based on what it says, Mi'nei ma'tamidei chachomim, Shebavel mutzionim. And it's a very cryptic Gemara. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos says, why is Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel Mitzuyonim? Now, Mitzuyonim means they wear special garments. The inference is that in Israel, the Talmidei Chachamim walks around like everybody else. But in Bavel, they had to wear special garments. Right? That's why in Chutz La'aretz, a rabbi has to wear special clothing. Just like in Bavel, they wore special clothing. So that's the case. Why is that the case? So the Gemara says a very strange thing. Mipnei Einot B'nei Mekoimon. They're not inhabitants of their locality. Which is strange, because these sages were born and bred in Bavel. So why are they not members, inhabitants of their locality? But it says there, Kedama Inche, this continuation of the quotation from the Gemara, like people say, B'masoi, when I'm in my city, Shamoi. Then my name is what makes me famous, right? If I live in Muncie and people know me in Muncie, so I don't have to go and make myself known. My name goes in front of, for better or for worse. My name is widespread in the town. But if I go to another city and I want to demonstrate to them that I'm a scholar of note, so then I'll have to walk around in the properly coded garments, which indicate that I am a scholar, right? A uniform, right? So it's very strange. Why are the Talmidei Chachamim, the sages in Bavel, called not in their place? Ubiyazer. So it says the explanation like this: Ki Adam Mechubar Beguf VeNefesh. A person is made up of body and soul. Haguf Labush LaNefesh, and the body is the garment of the soul, just like the clothing we wear are the garments of our body. So too, the body is the garment of the soul. It protects the soul. The soul functions through it. That is the body is the garment of the soul. K'mosh Nema, and he brings a proof from a pasuk in Iyov where it says, "Or ubasar kal bishemi." Iyov says, "You've clothed me in flesh and in skin and flesh." U'k'mosh adam amubash, and just like when a person is dressed. Ain't etzem adam nigla, you don't see the person himself. Rat b'mavusho, you only see his the way he's clothed himself. Shamalbush nigla, because the clothing is revealed. V'anu mevinim, and we know, shemalubash bo adam, that there's a person underneath the clothing. In other words, right now I only see your head. And I see you have a gray shirt on and black pants, right? So I know there's a body. How do I know there's a body underneath that shirt and those pants? What?
Maybe you're a floating head with air inflated body.
Right. Maybe there's nothing inside. Maybe you're a robot underneath for all I know. So our assumption is where there is clothing and there's a face and hands, there must be a body also, right? So in Afghanistan, you see women walking around with do it anymore in Afghanistan? I don't know, but they're under the Taliban, right? They used to walk around completely covered from head to toe. I don't know, there's actually a person walking inside there. Maybe it's just maybe it's a ghost. So we assume where there is clothing that there's a person underneath. He says, so too the soul in any race is not seen. Kemoshi is like it says, Raka malbush me'id, but the garments, which is the body, testifies sheesh bodovar nilvash, that there's something enclosed in it. In other words, the body cannot be sustained on its own, and therefore there must be a soul inside the body.
The animal soul to that soul?
Yes. Yeah. It's called the nefesh abahamis, the animal soul. But they do have one. This is why the language of mitzuyon outstanding goes amalbush on good clothing. Shetziun, because the word tziun, in its most literal sense, hula heker, means to recognize something. The Moshe Isa, okay. Like I said, the sign of the cross, you make markers to recognize our tzvaros where graves are. And so the marker on a grave is called a tziun. Yeah.
Do you think that you mean
to but they could have malachim associated with that. Yes, they don't sell, but they have malachim associated with them.
What if there's a
what? Doesn't matter. They don't have necessarily their own souls.
What about the Dizik?
What?
What if
it's not a soul of the tree. That's the soul.
Soul.
It's not the soul of the tree.
Right.
The soul of the tree would be the as an animating force which makes the tree grow.
What about the body?
What?
Do animals have a limb above their souls?
What?
Get to see your dog again and go to heaven.
This is the normally accepted answer is no.
So is that why when people see in movies a dog get hurt or die, they're so much more upset than when they see humans die? Because their soul recognizes that when a dog's gone, it's gone. And so they're very much more upset than when they see a guy.
That's an interesting idea. The general answer is no, but there are convoluted ways in which you can make it theological possible for a dog to be resurrected. You know, that the affinity between the dog and the master is such that the master soul and the dog soul are bound in each other. What? you can work it out somehow.
The form did that. A
what?
They would.
No. It's true. The article in the Jerusalem Post.
They would.
A beautiful thing. It must be a very moving ceremony.
It's pretty rough in the dog.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for a dog.
Did
he
have to lame?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want to ask that?
Yes. Let's see.
This is a big question. I mean, according to many Hasidim, we didn't discuss this recently. According to many Hasidim, Goyim only have a Nefesh HaBahamis. They only have an animal soul. I find that to be an untenable and unacceptable position. And, in other words, raw. Because obviously Goyim have the capacity to engage in higher, not all Goyim, but not all Jews either, have the capacity to engage in higher intellectual activity. So if it stands to reason that they don't just have an animal soul, but also they have the Ruach and the Shama, the other higher parts of the soul, which correspond to speech and to significant intellectual capacity.
They've never talked to a Jewish mathematics professor before, so they don't.
I'm not sure how they get around the problem of Ruach, certainly since the guy speaks, so therefore he's a medaber, and by definition, to speak, you have to have a Ruach, right, which is the capacity, the part of the Shema which gives you the power to speak. So I don't know exactly how they deal with that.
But the Rafa gave the Shemesh presentation last week. He said that Betia Shemesh is going to not be resurrected.
We got a lot of room.
That's not true.
That's what he mentioned.
He made a mistake.
What about
that Goyim won't be resurrected by Tia Shemesh? That's what I heard him say.
He made a mistake.
Maybe I misunderstood it.
I'm taking Libya. for myself.
Maybe, but if he said they're not resurrected, he made a mistake. It's explicit in the Rambam. The Rambam says that Chassidim Umos Olam Yeshem Chayas Olam Haba.
Oh, those
are Olam
Haba. That's not necessarily Chayam.
Okay. If you want to go like the Rambam, who says Chayas Amesim is at the end of this world, and Olam Haba is a separate place, so they could say that Chayas Amesim, they don't have Chayas Amesim, they only get Olam Haba. Yes, you could do that. Yes, it's a theological possibility. I doubt that's what he meant. But if he said he meant it,
but they would have to take the seven mitzvahs of the Shema in order to do that, right?
What?
I heard that even if a goy does the seven mitzvahs, according to Rambam, it says even if a goy does the seven mitzvahs, but if he doesn't do them the Shema, like if he doesn't realize that he's doing them for God, then it doesn't count anyway.
Right.
He has to do it. So, I mean, the number of goyim that actually do that are very few.
Why? Christians and Muslims all do it.
Yeah, I guess they do.
They don't have to do it for Hashem like Christianity is wrong. They just do it like the seven things that I'm doing. I believe God's commandments.
What?
I mean, they're not doing the seven because like, oh, well, Judaism is the best, but I'm going to settle with like seven. They're really doing because they think their seven is like a greater plan than Hashem commanding them.
Well, they call it the Ten Commandments.
Would that mean that they're still falling under the Rambam's?
It's debatable if they fall under the Rambam's category, but that's because the Rambam doesn't allow Christians to have more than one God, and they have three. But according to the Tosfos, it says that Goyim are allowed to have more than one God, so then it would work out.
Yes, Rabbi, could like nowadays Christians be considered like Tinoch Sheol or kidnapped?
Yeah, it's a good question whether the concept we have of a Tinoch Shenishba, a captured child, who is not educated, applies to non-Jews as well as it applies to Jews.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, to best of my knowledge, nobody's ever discussed the issue. So,
we're not concerned so much, apparently.
So, the Suzel Bomber, don't do this.
What?
Suzel Bomber, like, kind of considered after
Suzel Bomber? No, that there is free will. People are judged on their free will.
When the brain was the right idea?
Then there's diminished responsibility. There's still responsibility, but it's diminished. Okay, so he says, so just like a tzion is a marker, which marks something like a grave, so too, zel b'malbu shenikar b'luzuloso, so too you could say about the clothing by which you'll recognize somebody else, shayach tzion, to that is relevant the term tzion. Mnei kol chesrein es odam, now all the shortcomings which a person has, right there, boshas agupa chomil nefesh, was because Hashem clothed our souls in bodies. So that's where all our shortcomings come from. Every single one of them. Kamosha is the Sanhedrin, and it says Sanhedrin, that's what you say that day morning, the Shaman is not Tatabi, Torahi. The soul you gave me is pure, right? It's the body which then made the soul impure. If you have to be clarified more in Vayikra Rabbah, in the Medrash, which says, B'mashal d'chigeh v'suma, where it talks about the body being like a blind person who can walk, and the soul being like a lame person who can see. So what happens is that the person who is lame but can see rides on the shoulders of the person who is blind but can walk. So the capacity to go places and do things is granted to the soul only by its union with the body. So that's why without the body, the soul would not have the capacity or the inclination to sin. It's purely a function of having a body. The body is that which gives the capacity to sin and also draws a person into sin. Okay? So therefore, those malachim on high, real malachim, they don't possess a physical body. In order to describe them, they're called metaphorically wearing linen clothing. How does the metaphor work? It means to say, a white and clean linen garment, which was a very precious piece of article of clothing, the chashuv, a very significant article of clothing, etzlam by the ancient Jews in Babylon and the land of Israel. Like Gemara says in Pesachim, you don't show them the Taisa, see what Taisa says there. Shalachin, and therefore nitzavu the kohanim, the kohen gadol of the mikdash, therefore the kohanim and the kohen gadol in the Beit HaMikdash, the priest and the high priest, were commanded, with the exception of Yom Kippur, to wear, they're commanded, the regular kohanim every day, and the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur specifically, to wear the big day bat, to wear garments of linen. They used to wear linens, garments made out of white linen. Shem begadim hachashuvim shom, because those are significant garments in Eretz Yisrael, that's that. You know, Egyptian linen was considered to be the finest material from which you could make actual clothing. So that was a very fine material. Vodiyat Remez Badavar, and he says something very cryptically, there's another allusion we can give it to this. Ben Kamakomo, this is not the place to give it. I don't know what it is. Vayim V'divra Habone Zvachim, and I don't know exactly what he's referring to. Bakopani, in any event, Begadbad, the linen garment, Mora Alchus, indicates Alzakus, indicates purity, the Chashivus, Halavush Shuetlam, and the significance of the garment which they had, the most significant garment they had. The Chain Eitzah Kohanim, Shekurim Malachim, and so too by the priest, were called Malachim, this is a little bit of repetitions here, Kol Angels, Kol Moshe's brother, we explained, Shubali Avoida, who toiled, and they were the masters of toil, Vavoda, and that toil which they toiled to Tikkun Lavush is to correct the bar of the clothing, Shua Guf, which is the body, Ayidea Voda Bari Guf, by working with one's physical limbs. In other words, when we say we're Oyved Hashem, we're not Oyved Hashem just in thought or in speech, we're Oyved Hashem, we serve God with our bodies in order to fix these bodies which we are given, so to speak, the clothing which we have. So, therefore, in order to express they're working on the bodies and purifying there, they wore purifying clothing, white clothing. And I think you find other religions as well that white clothing represents, I'm not sure in every religion, I'm sure there are exceptions, but the white clothing represents a high degree of purity. And it represents, according to Torah, the purity not just of the clothing, but the purity of the body, which is the clothing of the soul. And therefore, you also have to say, interesting thing, says it's going to, you might think that Kohanim's entire value, the value of the pieces that they serve, is to make the physical world holy by doing, you know, the sacrificial service in the temple and by involving themselves in issues which concern tumah and tara, you know, impurity and impurity, like issues of saras, of leprosy, and stuff like that. So therefore, the Torah also has to tell us, or the prophet tells us, that you should learn Torah from him as well. It's not just that he's able to fix up stuff in this world, but he also is the ideal teacher of Torah. Why? Because of the purity and the high level which this person has achieved.
Do you think the reason why white is that like universal color because it's so easily distributed? Dirt on white, then like you can see it automatically. Maybe that's why the universal reason white is that.
And black can take the dirt.
Right. Black is dirt. And then he knows, but white, like one speck, could see.
Could be. It's part of the reason why white is considered to be
right.
So pure. Yeah, so
I would say the reflection of every frequency of light.
You know, that it's interesting thing, a Kohen who got blood splattered on his garments could not wear those garments.
Right,
he
was washing.
I mean, that's really almost an impossibility in the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, people were washing blood there all the time. It was a very gory place, the Beis HaMikdash. So, but somehow, the Kohanim were actually supposed to safeguard themselves from getting blood splattered on themselves. I don't know how they did. I guess they had scotch card. He says that the Beis Medrash which Halacha has learned and Divrei Torah has learned, Nikra Sha'arei Tzion, they're called the gates of Zion. But here is Zion in language of that which has a sign. Sha'arei Tzion b'Halacha, that which is marked by the Halacha which is studied there. So the Kiddushin, like it says in the Masechta Kiddushin, in Toga b'chol menuvol zeh, if this disgusting entity, the evil inclination, meets up with you, mashchei lebeis hamedrash, drag him to the Beis Medrash, and there the Torah will defeat him. Ubalabasa, and it says, Ubalabasa, bo HaKadosh Baruch Hu yetzer hara, Hashem created the evil inclination, bo ra tara tavrin, he created Torah to be the spice, the antidote with which the evil inclination is fought and defeated. Vina Yetzara, what is the Yetzara, says the Torah? That's anything. Who are Pchisus, Hanim Shachvarim Yitzaraguf. That Yetzara is the degradation which a person undergoes because he has a body. In other words, a person, were he not to have a body, he'd be completely good. The body is what gives the person the capacity to be driven to other goals and other aspirations. And therefore the Yetzer Hara is associated, says Absorbic, with the body. The Neshama is associated with the Yetzer Atov. The Yetzer Hara is associated with the body.
So why, what's the point of, you say that our purpose is to like use the body to do uplifting spiritual things, and so therefore we can't just, you know, be like these monks that go up and starve for a month. We're supposed to, you know, live in our bodies. But at the same time, it would seem that if our soul is pure when we come to the world, and the body is the only thing that brings it down, why don't we just lock ourselves in, like, carbon freeze or something, and just, like,
you know, just be totally inept the whole time and don't do anything, and then we won't soil our neshamas. But we also won't be doing any positive things.
Well, I don't know if I put it that way, but there is a tension within Judaism, which has existed throughout the ages until the last 100 years or so. Right now, everybody's a hedonist, right? No, there are no real ascetics anymore. You know what an ascetic is?
Yeah,
so they don't exist anymore. Now everybody's a hedonist. But once upon a time, there was a tension in Judaism between those who held of mortification of the flesh, which now we associate with Christianity, now Judaism.
Rolling in the snow.
What? Rolling in snow and stuff. And, or on the other hand, indulging the flesh. And so this was one of the big issues of Hasidus. Because until the Hasidim came along, their people were a lot more pro-mortification. Rolling in the snow, undergoing whippings, you know, sitting on anthills, fasting, well, just sleeping on the floor, all that kind of good stuff. And along came the Hasidim said, don't bother. Have some herring, have some schnapps, be happy, you know. So that actually is a tremendous a difference of opinion in Judaism as to how you deal with the body. Do you deal with the body by feeding the body, or deal with the body by starving the body?
I guess if what is the notion of feeding the body like, you know, throw out a bone and say, here, body, have some nice food, now leave me alone, let me do good mitzvahs.
That's one way of looking at it. The Maharal actually, in fact, said that.
I heard that's why we eat so much on Shabbos, only that's why we eat so much on Shabbos.
Right, but that's not what a real chassid would tell you. A real chassid would tell you that the reason the eating itself is made into an act of holiness. It's not just that you eat in order to let the body not be distracted, but also the eating is an act of holiness. But on the lower level, even the chassid agrees, the reason why a chassid eats before davening, why does a chassid eat before davening?
So he doesn't eat to daven?
What?
So he doesn't daven to eat, rather he eats to daven?
Right, he doesn't, so that while he's davening, he won't be distracted by thoughts of, you know, the schnapps and the herring. So therefore he has it before he starts davening in the morning. So that's the idea that approaching this world, the body, by overcoming it by, you know, going along with it.
Schnapps and herring in the morning.
Even before Shabbos.
Make a shahako.
In pi halacha, according to whom?
You can't have mezonos according to most of the
Torah.
According to non-chassidim. According to
neutral.
Yeah, somebody called me up yesterday and asked me, a parent of somebody, which I don't know exactly whose parent it was, but he asked me, is Or Samech a Hasidic yeshiva or a Masnik yeshiva? And I knew from the way he phrased the question that if it was a Masnik yeshiva, we'd be in trouble. So I said, no, we have a little bit of both. We have some Masnik, but we have some Hasidim. We have a Rosh Yeshiva, a big Hasid. So, you know, that way I kind of made the guy happy.
So
Pim is not in the Hasidim are doing bad things.
I thought
it's
only the Shulchan Aruch.
No, anything?
Except
for tea and water or whatever?
Except for tea, water, tea, and coffee, and milk and sugar are an issue.
Yes.
I
thought
it
was just on the Zoros you could have.
What about Hasidim when they're locked in?
Hasidim eat cereal, cake,
what?
Bread.
The Mishnagdim of the Hasidim are not allowed to eat what they're eating, and they're probably going to hell for it. But the Hasidim hold that anything which gives them additional kavana during davening.
That makes sense, though.
Well,
because wearing sandals.
It's not irrational what the Hasidim say.
It's not irrational.
It's not irrational.
So if they're doing it with the right kavana, maybe.
Yeah, what happened was, once we found with Hasidus is that once. The first couple of generations, maybe, so they were eating, and then there was a lot of fervor. But as the Hasidim calcified, so then they were eating, and they still were davening like we snobbed it. So yeah, they lost on both accounts.
But they weren't hungry.
Right, they weren't hungry. Look at it that way.
There's no issue with the
Shema,
right?
With the what?
Shema, reading, I mean, you saw the davening on the Shabbos, they start later on, right?
Back.
They saw it at 10 o'clock.
The
issue was that
it
was preparing themselves.
Back.
Learning.
Mikvah.
Learning.
Mikvah.
Sleeping.
I'm sleeping.
Preparing myself
for sleep. It amazes me always when I see a chassid coming to shul and everybody's about to start davening. Well, for that matter, they just started davening. We start davening and he sits down with a sefer, takes out a piece of cake, you know, starts eating and learning. And you're just Mrs. Sheila the Sea Bird. And that, you know, it's so antithetical to our way of thinking.
Wait,
but
and
that's
he davened by himself afterwards?
Yeah. Whenever he decides, he's spiritually up to it. He starts davening. Yeah.
Nice.
Maybe in your, in like,
I
your
like that approach in a certain way.
It's usually, I say that.
I like that approach
in
a certain way. It's a very laid-back approach.
Right.
It might work very well with it, probably.
I've done that a couple times. Running late to davening, and I'll be like, oh, I gotta get hurry up so I can catch up. Yeah, forget about it. They finish before me.
Have a little whiskey.
Yeah.
Learn something that pleases you.
Right, Hasidim have much far less psychological problems than the Smachim. That's certainly the case. They're much more calm, you know.
Well, that's because of their chillin', though.
I know. It also, the eating before that in the house too. What do you think? It's
yeah,
fair.
True.
So the so yes, if you want to, yeah, it's they're kind of irritable. That's the way it is.
And also, if you were a chassid in a chassidic yeshiva or something, or like a balabas, like a chassid, and you did something weird in shul, like you sat down, you weren't talking with anyone, you were just saying tehillim, and then you just, you know, you did your own thing or whatever. Like, no one would come, the rabbi wouldn't come up to you and be like, what are you doing? Like, you're here to daven.
I'm not so sure that that's the case anymore, though, because now they're not, you know, they're only slightly less regimented than the
but like in the old, the good old days of Chassidus,
right, the good old
days. No one would have said anything. Today, it'd be like, what are you doing?
The, that's right. Okay, so he says that, so the point is that the Yetzara and the Yoni Yetzara of Chisus is the low level. And each of them, which is drawn onto a person, mitzad ha'agub because of his body. Moshe is a Sanhedrin, you're in trouble. Like it says, Sanhedrin. The Shoah Rakashat Yitzira. The question there was, when does a person get when does a person get his Yetzer Hara? So when does he get his Yetzer Hara when he is formed, which is 40 days after conception, or does he get it when he leaves the mother's womb? The discussion there in the Sefer Sanhedrin. Where does the Yetzer Hara come into a person? When does the Yetzer itself come into a person according to the Medrash?
Bar
Mitzvah, right. But the Yetzer.
It's not there.
What?
It's not there. You get the
Yetzer
Hara when you're born, and you get the Yetzer
itself
when you're Bar
Mitzvah.
Why is not
there?
Because you get
certain
years, so you
know,
the Yetzer Hara, you know, gets the whole thing.
That's what the Rosh Hashem talks about.
Does that mean there's no soul to get forgiven? Well, first of all, the Rebbe Tzol Salanter says, this is not necessarily Rebbe Tzol Salanter, but Rebbe Tzol Salanter says that the Yetzer Hara is emotion, and the Yetzer Hara is intellect. And young children, up to the age of around Bar Mitzvah, are incapable of independent thought. They can be very, very, very smart, and they can master lots of facts, and they can be very good, because they're schooled at being good, or they have some innate goodness, but they don't have the capacity for higher forms of thought and deliberate decisions to do X or Y. That capacity only comes with age, when a person reaches the maturity of his teenage years. Usually Bar Mitzvah is a bit early from our perspective, but sometime when a person is a teenager, that begins to happen. But the Yetzer Hara, the emotions, any kid has from the time they're born, at least from the time they're born, and according to Gemara, they're perhaps even earlier.
So you're pointing to that, until he reaches Bar Mitzvah, she always makes the wrong decisions?
What?
She always makes the wrong decisions?
No. He should be trained. That's why we have the concept of schooling. Right? Teaching. In other words, our effort to habituate him to make the right choices, even though he doesn't have the capacity for higher thought and doesn't yet know how to sort things out himself.
What do you mean by higher thought?
By higher thought means I'm going to make a deliberate, but I'm going to weigh the facts and the arguments on both sides, consider objectively, and come to a conclusion. Some people never reach that. Perhaps the majority of the population never reaches that capacity, since most people are morons. But we agree about that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a
question
of perception, how you perceive people. I don't think most people.
They can be very holy.
What?
I don't think most people are morons.
You think most people are what? You think most people think?
Yeah.
Anybody who watches television, by definition, most people who watch television are brain dead. What? Brain dead?
Brain dead.
Right?
Why is that, Robin?
What?
Why did brain dead?
Because television is designed to turn off your brain. It's just to sit, that's the entertainment quality of television. Right? It's not meant to, even those who argue, and I think they're full of baloney, even those who argue that movies, you know, have some form of art and some profundity and some depth to them, right? It's not the same thing about television. Television is just, you know, mindless activity. Just just sitting and absorbing. There is no thought going into television.
Unless you think about
No, you're watching the commercials after.
Yeah.
People can't concentrate more than 7 minutes. Seven commercials come on.
What?
What if you watch the documentary?
Every shot, by the way, like...
Yeah, no, if a person watches this no entire life, the History Channel, the Doctor, the Discovery Channel, maybe such a person is on a higher Madrid. I'm talking about people who watch, you know, HBO, or, you know, people who watch the network television, Fox, right? Those types of people. The,
You notice how the shot... We were noticing how the shot time has decreased since, like, when television came out. It used to be, like, you know, maybe even a whole, like, 5 minutes of one... camera
right.
shot.
Right.
The whole show is one camera shot. And then it was like 30 seconds for a camera shot and then another shot. Now it's like 2 seconds.
I think it's I think 7 seconds is the maximum.
Yeah.
So the so in any event, that capacity to actually engage in that kind of thought only comes, you know, later. It doesn't come. A little kid doesn't have that. Even if they're smart. It's hard to assess things independently when you're young. We got young. That's why it's very rare. Never happened, but who knows. I assume there have been no people who have become Balei Tshuva when they're 8 or 9 years old. Because who's capable of thought at that time, right? It usually happens somewhat later.
12, 13, please.
Right. So I think that's a symptom of the fact that people don't have the capacity for higher thought until somewhat later. So the Yetzer Hara, on the other hand, which is emotion, and it kicks in much earlier. Every baby's emotional starts crying the moment he comes from the womb. What it says there in the Sefer Sanhedrin, it says that we have a machlokas there, the Shoal Rakashat Yitzira, where does the Yetzer Hara come in at the time the kid is born, at the time he is formed. The Lo Ashat Pita, but not well, was no question that the Yetzer Hara comes in at the time of conception. I have to be creational on nefesh. Why not? The ray is the soul. The soul is designated by God at the moment of conception, right? When the man or woman conceive a child, that's when there is a soul. So, why only 40 days later would there be a yetzer hara? Why not at that exact point in time? So it says the tzaddik that I shall be creational nefesh because much enim lubeshes beguf as long as it's not clothed in a body, ein mokom layetzer. Only when the body is formed, which is 40 days after the child is conceived, only then can there be yetzer hara. Before that, there's pure neshama, no yetzer hara possible whatsoever. It could be the yetzer hara comes in later, because you need him in a later degree of formation of the body, when the kid leaves the womb. But it definitely can't be before there's some body to which to attribute the yetzer hara. Okay? Let's just finish this paragraph. The Torah is the antidote or the spice for this garment, the body. Lasos lebush ba, to make of this body linen clothing. Dugmas malecha shoresh, just like the angels. Now the angels are pure, and their purity is symbolized by their being envisioned by us when we envision angels in white clothing. The Torah is like the the way it's frequently put is Torah is like detergent. Right, Torah comes to cleanse the body, make it uplifted, and the mitzvahs are those enzymes which cause lift off the dirt and cleanse the clothing, i.e., the body of a person.
Wouldn't Shuvah do that? Not Torah.
What?
I don't understand because if I do a nevera and then I learn a bunch of Torah, the nevera is still stained on my clothes, so to speak, until I do Shuvah for it to get the stain off. So how can we say that, how is Torah like a detergent when really it seems that only tshuva would be the only mitzvah that is a detergent?
Yeah, but the thing is like this. The mashal is, to take the mashal further, sometimes you need pre-wash. What is that called again?
Pre-soaking.
No, not pre-soaking. That stuff you put on, like,
so
when you have
to stick it on the
same way.
And then you wash it.
Well, yes. Yeah, it's when you have, like, ring around the collar. You try to get out. Rub and wash. I don't remember exactly what it's called. Anyway, so the tshuva is when a person has stained himself, then he needs to have he needs to do tshuva. But even if the person is not stained, the garment, it's, you know, it's after you wore it, it's sweaty. It's it's what's called it's creased. There are all sorts of things which have to go on in order to cleanse it. So the same thing, the body which we're given it in order to cleanse it. I once heard a beautiful pshat. I think I said it over once, but not recently, and probably not everybody was here. The word pshat. What does the word pshat mean?
Simple.
What?
Simple, straight.
That's what it means. Simple or straight, right? So there's a verb in Hebrew, lishot. The verb in Hebrew lishot means
straighten
out. To stretch. So one of my rabbis once put it like this. I don't know if he made this is his original. But he said the way you learn Torah is you have a sugya, you know, a topic, and when the topic comes in front of you, it's like crumbled, like messed up. And what you do is you poshate the sugya, you smooth it out. All those creases, you take out the creases. That's what pshat does. So the same thing you have in life. In other words, the life is supposed to be, ideally speaking, and ideally, of course, is a very powerful word, is smoothing out the wrinkles, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be taking out stains. That person has tshuva, and everybody has to do tshuva, because all of us sin. But theoretically, even without that sin, which do tshuva, there's all those wrinkles which have to be smoothed out, which is another metaphor one can use. If one doesn't like the laundry metaphor, you can use the ironing metaphor.
So would Kabbalah be like a really hot iron that, like, really
stream. Right, but it can burn.
That's
what you're leaving there too long. Okay. So he says, this is by marking a person with halacha. Shalacha, ki ha-metzayenet, halacha marks u-metzamenet and makes a sign, identification, low for the person ha-derech, the way in which he's supposed to go. V'metzuyon b'hushnoet. Such a person is going the right way, he has a nice garment. The Zelda Messiah, the Tamil Chomim are Mitzuyan in their garments, not just in their outer garments, which reflect their rabbinical status, but rather in their pathways. They mark as special because they conduct themselves according to Halacha. The Zelgankin in Yen HaTzitzis. And that's the point of Tzitzis. Kigam Heim Tzion Veheker. They're also supposed to be a marker, and something you're supposed to recognize, Lamar Zeh Derech Chubot, to say this is the path in which you should go. Emotion on them, like it says, u'isem oso u'zchatem. You should see them and remember. Meaning that this is part of the tziyum, marking a person, marking him by a tzitzis, that this is the way he should go. U'kachu kanfei b'dem l'mala. And therefore, it's supposed to be on the corners of your garment on top. Right? It's supposed to be revealed. Shoshamu ninikar, even though people nowadays who don't wear the tzitzis out, it's because our clothing is not structured the way their clothing was. The way their clothing was structured, they wore the tzitzis out because that was the garment they were wearing. They put, in perhaps special arba kantos like we have, they have garments in which they put tzitzis, right?
I would love that.
What?
I would love to have a shirt that
people, like, I think it's Sephardi or two, came up to me and were like, wearing tzitzis out of goats. And they said it like, as if like the Ben Ish Kai, like,
yeah, there are a sort of
there isn't enough that's
yeah.
Same with
Yekis,
yeah?
No, Yekis, just because it's not orderly.
I don't know, it says because it says you should see them, not everybody else.
No, it's not because that, because it looks sloppy to have a sister self.
You go to cemetery,
yeah. Yeah, but that's why, yeah.
Not to tease
what was the reason for the scar in the second
room? I don't remember. But there is no source, I just don't remember. Okay, and therefore wearing garments with tzitzis, romes indicates shalavush mitzion karaui, indicates that a person's garment, not just his outer garment, but his inner garment, right, has its own suitable marking, right? In other words, the tzitzis is not just for itself, but it indicates that a person is working on purifying the body which is within him. He has this siyun, this marker, to help cleanse and whiten his body, his yetzirah. The Rav of Talmidei Chachamim are yulovshim, and it says, interesting thing, the Rav of Talmidei Chachamim are yulovshim osan. And he says that back then, only Talmidei Chachamim would wear the tzitzis, not the regular people, according to Rashi. Why? Because Shirach HaTorah Mitzayenes Adam, because only Torah can mark a person as being special, and therefore only Talmidei Chachamim would wear those days tzitzis.
Common person
wouldn't wear tzitzis.
Or a
kippah,
yeah?
Some places. Tzitzis, a yarmulke, even tzitzis, common people wouldn't wear in the old days.
Really?
Yeah.
Wouldn't, like, make a... They just wouldn't have, like, a full corner garment
to wear? What?
They wouldn't have a
full... No, I don't know.
That's...
I know. Yeah, but that copper told me to take off my
yarmulke. I gotta be down my arm.
So what did you do about all the concepts of people missing the...
An understanding is at least once in your life you have to put on tefillin. Not really required to put it on every day.
I'm
coming.
Yeah, because what happened was that people in the old days, Talmidei Chachamim were Talmidei Chachamim. So therefore, people didn't want to pretend to be Talmidei Chachamim if they weren't. And they were honest with themselves. But now, Talmidei Chachamim are not really Talmidei Chachamim anymore. And people are never honest with themselves. So therefore, it's terrible things that I'm saying. They're morons, they're not honest. I apologize to mankind tonight. But the idea is that, yes, so therefore, why distinguish anymore? There's no point in doing it. But, you know, even until medieval times, until the times of, like, the places, so regular Jews not wear tefillin every day. Just tell me how come you put on tefillin every day. What?
Schoenberg in the
Shrines. No, I'm saying even during davening. Even during davening, regular people wouldn't put on tefillin.
What about Yom Kippur? Wouldn't that enter? I heard like some Sephardim wouldn't wear Yom Kippur until davening or learning Torah until they started becoming more.
When they were living in Yemen, they
died. I can't tell you. I don't know. Well, I assume sometime in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Rabbi,
what's
the reason that the Jews
wear yarmulkes? It's supposed to, it's the Gemara, some Talmudic source which says that having something on one's head reminds the person that there's something above. Right. Well, they don't know if that's the exact motivation, but yeah, that's what they say. A yarmulke is Yorei Malka, you're afraid of a king, but it's introduced, it's supposed to, remind you.
What's the thing about the double floor yarmulke?
It's a bunch of baloney.
That's Kabbalistic.
No, it's not Kabbalistic.
Double covering?
Kabbalistic, what's Kabbalistic is to wear a hat and a yarmulke.
What's the difference with having a hat and a yarmulke and two yarmulkes?
Because a hat is considered to be more respectful. You're supposed to do things wearing a second covering, but not the second covering is a yarmulke with two parts to it.
What about two yarmulkes?
What?
What about two yarmulkes? Like a small yarmulke?
That's no good. Because Gemara and Horio says if you wear two garments which are identical, you forget what you learned.
No, you have to keep a sruga, and then you have like little black ones on top.
No. But that's why you see like Lubavitchers, a lot of Lubavitchers walk around all the time. Well, they don't do, sometimes they do that, which is preposterous. But they wear, they won't necessarily put on a jacket, but they'll put on a hat. Because the hat is considered a pikapos. There's a story that C.C. Eliezer brings it down, that Rabbi Shlom Najara, who wrote the Kari Bone, he was a very holy guy, he lived in Tzfat. So,
the
time of Ari. So, once he was singing Zemiros on Friday night, without his hat on, just with the yarmulke on. And Arizal sent a message to him. Of course, Arizal didn't know it was news for Ruach HaKodesh. But Arizal sent a message, put on your hat. Because the Malachim are upset. We're singing Zmiros only with your holy Zmiros, which of course Malachim come to hear, that you're singing them only with a yarmulke on and not with a hat on. So we're the Kabbalistic source for having a double covering. But again, it's not a hat, it's not a yarmulke and a hat, and two yarmulkes or a double yarmulke that the Yom is going to have.
So what
now, I want you to know, the old Mitznagdim, the Litvaks in the old days, mm-hmm. the Yekas, of course, when they used to put on their hats, some still do. They used to put on their hats, they used to take off their Yarmulkes.
Why?
What?
Why?
Because what's the point of having Yarmulkes if having a hat on?
Right.
Double covering.
They didn't hold them out. They were not Kabbalists. They didn't hold of that.
And
there's nothing wrong with
saying
double covering.
What? What there's for? It's hot.
Well, like,
it's a
nuisance. Did you do the doctor to show that they want to have one covering?
No, so just because they didn't care.
Wouldn't double covering be two identical covers?
Especially in the old days when they wore those litvish yarmulkes. The cool yarmulkes which nobody wears anymore, you know, like the bunch of black yarmulkes.
Who's calm that way?
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah, the old people, it's very funny.
Uh-huh.
They
become
everyone.
You never heard of one of those toy yarmulkes?
They're
so cool.
Yeah, they're all the cool trans
yeah.
Yeah.
They're
they're
straight up. They go straight up.
Old
get one.
I don't know if you can buy them anymore.
Would a double yarmulke consist of two identical garments?
What?
You say if you wear two identical garments that you forget your Torah.
Right.
So would a double yarmulke be considered that?
You mean one like this, which has an inside?
Yeah.
No.
No.
It comes together.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. If a person walks around with a hat and a yarmulke, does it make a difference whether he's just wearing the yarmulke or wearing a hat with a yarmulke? Or if he just walks around? Or does it show nobility? You know, Jewish nobility.
To wear the hat?
Yeah, because the
Rebbe
says that a Jew with a hat shows the world that he's a soldier of Hashem.
Only if he has a yarmulke sticking out the back of the hat.
That's
the thing is, why nowadays it represents some kind of, it represents a Jewish movement? That's my question. Why does it represent a Jewish movement, the hat?
People in the
30s. Doesn't wear a hat, and maybe he's like yeshivas or...
Turban. It's only...
I'll give you the answer. It's a very simple answer.
Yeah.
And the answer is like this. Since most, as we said before, most people are morons, and most people don't think. So therefore, in education, much education is done by rote meaning, you know, without thought, just by going through the motions. And one of the things which you can do with a kid when you want to educate him or go in a certain way is give him a uniform which allows him to identify with role models with which you want him to identify. So, Reb Moshe Feinstein, a hat, right? Whoever you name, you know, the overwhelming majority of Talmidei Chachamim, at least in Chutz La'aretz, wear hats most of the time. So therefore, if I put a hat and jacket on you, even though you're not a thinking individual, but automatically, you're part of a pyramid at the top of which is Reb Moshe Feinstein. And you are part of that, and there's a subtle message to you, which doesn't even have to be verbalized. This is our aspiration. These are the people we regard as holy, as people to admire, emulate, and that's the way. But if you take a kid and you give him, in America, you give him a small knitted yarmulke, right? And you don't, and you let him wear, you know, polo shirts. So then his role model will at best be the balabas in his shul who comes at around the time of laning and then schmoozes about sports, you know, for the rest of the day. So that's not very good education.
somebody gave me, somebody, one of my students used to wear a hat, he's wearing a very nice hat. Are you serious? And I worked one.
Hope you like
motion. And, you know, I was wearing a white shirt, you know, I wasn't just like wearing a shirt like this and just a hat. But I put on the hat because it looks nice. It looks beautiful. It looks nice. I like the hat. I like the style. And I mean, I didn't put it like this, but I put it just to get it warmed up. And somebody made a comment to me, like, you know, you shouldn't wear a hat as if I'm like, you know, you're not ready yet. You're not ready for a hat. Like a hat is a
you're not at that level.
No? Like you're not ready yet. Like you're brown belt. You're not ready for a hat. Once you get a black belt, that's not a hat.
That's the way it is in North America, really.
And I looked around,
really,
what am I supposed to say?
And I looked around and I said, all right, and I took the hat off because it doesn't make a difference for me. It's just a matter of style for me. You know, but the question is, like, how can somebody make such a statement? That would be logical because the hat is for when you're davening, right? It's for Kabbalistic reasons and other ways.
See, I can't really answer you because I don't know who said it to you, so therefore I don't want to say anything. I don't want to get in trouble here.
So wait, so if someone's a thinking person, then they shouldn't have to wear a hat?
Right. If somebody's really a thinking person, they shouldn't have to wear a hat, but that is certainly very rare in society.
Yeah. That's why a bunch of worse than people don't wear a hat.
If you're a thinking person, and you're able
to
play the pen,
you don't wear a hat. You're a thinking person, that's why you don't wear a hat.
No, my hats look nice, no?
They only look nice because you've been socialized to think they look nice.
Yeah, I don't think they look nice at all.
I'll tell you what, it's when I watch these 1920s movies, like
those are different hats.
Mafia, you know?
Those are different hats. And they're great.
I'm in the that system, you know, the mafia, like jazz,
I used to wear a hat and a jacket when I used to